What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
What's up, everybody? We are back.
That's right.
Another week.
Every Thursday, baby.
Yes, sir.
Have you noticed I keep jumping on you as you do the open?
You always do that. But my open is not like a standard open. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't have like a, I need like a, like a, like a tagline or something.
Oh, like a catchphrase?
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like some shit that I say every
like
single time.
Like zippity doo dah. Welcome.
Yeah, so that you know that not to step on my shit. You know what I'm saying?
Like he's in the middle of his thing. Like don't mess with it. By the way, I see you pulling up on Instagram. Your post about Frazier's was the funniest Instagram
post, incredible with these fake Jordans he keeps pulling out. Bro.
I was thinking, I was like, did you get him part of Jordan brand?
No, I did not.
Oh my goodness,
that's
man.
That's why I keep calling him Canal Street Clint.
Oh, that these is hilarious. That is like, dude, I'm so excited for today's guest, Mike Harkey.
Yeah, this is going to be fun, man. This is going to be fun. This is my big brother. This is I mean, if you guys think I'm funny, man, this is where I get everything from.
I will guarantee incredible amounts of laughter for the audience today. Like, you have to listen. And also, we want to let you guys know that R2C2 now, we have over 1,000 five-star reviews on iTunes. So we said we do another giveaway. We're doing another giveaway. Here's how we're going to do it. Write a review on iTunes. Give us a five-star review. Because as CeCe knows, I won't accept
it. Does it have to be a five-star?
It has to.
You can't force people to give you a five-star review.
I have to. They're not winning a prize if they give us a two-star review. Write a review on iTunes. Give us five stars. Take a screenshot of the review. Then tweet it at the show using the hashtag R2C2. This is like what we did last time. Tag three friends with a link to the show. We will choose the most funny and engaging review. Remember last time we had the girl, who wrote the rap or song or whatever? So same thing. Come up with a funny, engaging review. Take a screenshot of it. Tweet the show using the hashtag R2C2. Tag three friends with a link to the show. And then we will choose three winners who will receive a prize courtesy of R2C2 and Uninterrupted. We will give away an Uninterrupted prize pack of a bunch of swag. We'll give away an autographed CC picture, which we already have, so you don't even have to do anything.
Nice.
And then the grand prize will be an autographed pair of CC's game-worn cleats, so that you're going to have to do something with.
I got that.
Okay, cool. So that is the new giveaway, so make sure we're going to announce the winner next Thursday, May 2nd, so make sure you are submitting your entries. And remember always to rate, review, subscribe, and listen to R2C2. Without further ado, should we introduce your big bro?
Let's go. Mike Harkey.
Here he is. Yeah, we could just roll. This is how we do, Hark. We just go.
We just roll right
Bam.
Into it, man.
Hey.
Right into it.
You're going to have the best show ever right here.
I heard I need to ask about some contests you and Rad got going.
Oh, yeah. Spring training,
that's
man.
That's not even right.
Oh, man. What happened here? What happened here in spring training with you?
Stirred up my ego a little bit, man. I thought I was 26 again.
Yeah?
But they had the gun out in the cage, and they said they were talking. Him and Webby were going back and forth on who could throw 75 on a gun. I was 75? I mean, I could do that in my sleep. I told him, I said, I bet you I can hit 80. Easy.
From the mound?
No, just anywhere.
With a crow hopper?
With a running start. Okay. As hard as I can do it. So then I backed out of it, and then they went in there, and they said, Brad and Webby went in there, and Rad hit 81. I said, you hit 81? Oh, I know I can hit 85. They said, I'll bet you anything you want to bet. I said, okay, let's go. So I went in there. I took the softball. I started winging it all over the – all over the cage, getting loose. I said, this is going to be easy. First throw is going to be at least 83. I throw the first one, it was 69. I almost fell out. I said, Webby, that gun needs to be calibrated. There's no way that I just threw 169. And I thought I threw that thing hard.
Oh, no.
So I throw another one, and all of a sudden, it's 69 again. I said, what the heck? I didn't even break 70. I was embarrassed. I walked out of there with my tail between my legs. I said, I can't do this anymore.
Oh, man.
I said, I just let a 26-year-old former catcher throw harder than me. I said, I know I'll never throw a BP again.
Oh, time to shut it down.
That's phenomenal. Out. And how hard did you used to throw back in the day? You hit triple digits, right?
Yeah, I used to hit 100.
Oh,
I said, man. Does it take 30 years to stop being able to throw 100? I guess it does, man.
Velocity keeps diminishing.
Man, Chappie was throwing 93 in spring training. We were freaking out. All of a sudden, all he needed was a save situation. So, you know what? Maybe I need some better conditions down there. Get one of them portable mounds and put it down there. I'm going to put Gary Sheffield in the batter's box. Maybe I can throw harder then.
Yeah, maybe all you need is the stakes raise. What'd you lose to Rats? Do we know?
I lost $20.
Okay, all right. So maybe you need to add like a couple zeros there and step back on the mound, and that'll get the adrenaline pumping.
Yeah, but $20 to me is 20,000 cc. So it didn't matter.
Well, you're not wrong about that, man. Yeah. It's 20,000 to him.
Yeah. Well, he got one more year, and his budget's going way down.
Oh, man.
Retirement budget.
Oh, yeah. Amber's already, she's just slowly siphoning money out of that account, putting it into a Swiss bank account, making sure. So for all the waiters and waitresses out there, your tips will drastically change October.
Oh, my gosh. I already know Hark's going to be the greatest R2C2 guest of all time. You got everything on this guy.
You got everything. I'm going to have to start buying dinners and trips.
Oh, my gosh.
Concerts go. I said, man.
I already got Hixie and Dylan buying dinners and stuff now.
Oh, all you had to do was leave spring training. You saw Hixie follow you right down here.
He's right up here.
He's spending extra time in New York just so he can get those meals on here.
I saw him in the kitchen. I said, what are you doing here? He says, I had to come up here for me.
I said, for you?
See, you can't help us. You need to go back to town.
That is phenomenal. Does that happen, though, where you like you bring a group to dinner? Maybe not your teammates, maybe your teammates. But like, and everybody's just like looking at you like, oh, you got this one, right? See, how often does that happen?
I don't know if it happens. I don't know. I mean, I'm always just the one that pays for the dinner. You know, it's just is what it is. I've never even thought of it any other way. But now that these young guys are starting to get paid, they got to start buying it.
Yeah, man. Come on now.
Stop going to the bathroom when the check comes.
Exactly, man. That's funny, though. You know what? Do you actually think about that? Like, what is it going to be like? What is life? I mean, you've done very well for yourself.
Retirement, you mean?
Yeah. Like, what is going to be like? Does lifestyle change?
Oh,
like,
of course. Lifestyle's got to change. Yeah. You ain't making that money no more. So, yeah. Everything's going to change. But I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. Like, just, you know, being able to relax and not have to travel as much, too. I mean, that takes a toll on spending money, too.
But you know what the bottom line is, Hark? You get all those concerts in this year for C. You make sure you do all the meals. Man. Every night you guys go out to dinner.
This is why we go to breakfast every morning. This is my breakfast partner.
This is my breakfast partner. But since angioplasty, we went from regular eggs. We got egg whites.
Egg whites and turkey bacon.
Egg whites, turkey sausage. No more gravy on the biscuits. We got gluten-free biscuits. So I don't know how this breakfast is going to work. We're going to have to find us a vegan soul food.
Oh, man. Kansas City's going to be a lot different this year, man.
Oh, man. It's going to be a different trip for us, man.
That's hilarious. So when did you guys start that tradition of going to breakfast, every day on the road together?
Man. Probably when I came back.
Yeah.
When I got back in 16.
Okay.
Yeah. We started, every 9 in the morning on the road. If his family's not there or my family's not there, we go.
Is that the time? You guys always go same time?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny is I always joke with Hark. Hark left to go to be the pitching coach in Arizona for, 3 years?
Two.
2 years, and I ended up in rehab. He left me for 2 years, man. I didn't know what to do.
The weirdest sponsor ever. Don't even drink. drink, but I'm a sponsor.
So I've been back. He's got his four-year chip coming up.
That is terrific. Oh, my gosh. That's great. He had to come back for
he
you.
He had to come back, man.
Oh my gosh. You know, what was it? What was it like coming back, Ark? Because I do feel like you are so beloved by everybody in this organization, and it feels like I almost forgot that you were gone 2 years because it feels like you just picked right back up where you were before that.
You might have forgotten. I sure the heck did forget. Every time I stepped into a West End, every time I got on I don't even know what the name of the airline was. I sure the heck noticed.
You say the experience a little different here. Huh?
You know what they tell you, the grass is not always greener. Was brown as heck.
Oh my gosh. This is what CC says always. Like, whenever there's like a new guy who comes here, you always say, like, this is the big leagues.
This is the big leagues, man. Yes. I'm trying to tell you. This is a lot different here. This is what you expect the big leagues to be.
Yeah.
When you come to New York and you know, all those other places, it's just not as good. It's fun, but it's not as good as playing.
I mean, it's still, when you're on the field, it's big leagues. It's just everything else is just that goes along with it. Everything is first class, and you know that you're just treated with another level of respect here. That, you know, it comes with going out and winning every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think players love that more than anything, that they have a chance to win every time they take the field.
You know. When you guys came here maybe a year before CC,
yeah,
right?
I was here in 2008.
Yeah, you came in 2008. Did you bomb pretty quickly in 2009 when you came, see? I know the breakfasts didn't start till 2016, but when did you guys hit it off?
Yeah, like I think right away in spring training. I remember, I didn't know Hark that well, but, you know, I walked in and I'm sitting in the food room back in the day. Remember they had the couch back in there?
Yeah.
And I had the TV on. It was early in the morning. I had a TV on BET. And he came walking in and was like, yeah, find somebody.
I said, finally, Black Chapel. We don't have to watch MTV anymore.
Oh,
it's not Sports Center every day. We got Yo MTV Raps coming on a little while.
That is tremendous. Oh, my gosh. Well, and we know that, you know, Mike Harkey's last year on Players Weekend jersey was I'm Not CeCe for the nickname, which was phenomenal, which of course begs the question, Hark, how often does it happen that people mistake you for CeCe?
Every single day.
Oh my gosh.
Every single day. He can be standing next to me and then he'll walk away. And I'll still be out there throwing right-handed, and people will say, CeCe. And I'm like, amazing. You're not true Yankee fans. You know he's left-handed. In the bullpen, they think he's the bullpen coach. I'm like, you're not a true Yankee fan because you know that CeCe's not down here during the game. In the bullpen.
That's hilarious, man.
You guys won game. You should switch jerseys during the game, and you go out in the bullpen, act like the coach. And you should be on the top step, hands over. See if anybody notices,
Nobody
will notice. The only person who will notice is Michael Kay. That's about it. Nobody else will pay attention to it.
Oh,
every fan will think it's still CeCe everywhere. He's like, wow, he's everywhere.
That is phenomenal. You know, Hark, when people do this, you got to make sure to tell them, hey, like, make sure you subscribe, rate, review the podcast, R2C2, go get it on iTunes, right? So every time someone says you're CeCe, you just direct them to the podcast for us, okay? The
problem is they can't see our faces right now. So I haven't had a mustache or a beard in 12, 15 years now, and they still see CeCe with a beard that he's not supposed to have. He's allowed to have the mustache, but he still has the soul patch. He's been rocking the soul patch for 10 years here in Yankee Stadium. Oh, I still remember Jennifer Steiner always sending Joe text messages. Could you tell CeCe to shave? But his biggest corrupter, who was here now, Andy Pettit, has taught him all these
little
things.
He told me all these little
everything.
Things.
Wait, Andy taught you the tricks, the facial hair tricks?
Little tricks, man.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's Andy tell you?
You're fine as long as you're out there. Like so long as you're pitching, you can have a beard. You know what I mean? And then the next day when you're not out there, you shave.
Yeah. So is that your rule?
That's
kind of like
how I like play it out. I play it out like that.
All right, so you grow it out, and then after your start, shave.
Then you shave. Yeah.
That's so interesting.
But if you pitch good, you might wait a little longer. Yeah.
Your ass gets shelled. You better be clean by postgame.
Clean shaven by the time you come up here to do your press conference.
That's it,
T-Tay, man. The biggest corrupter of all the pitchers here. I said,
he really is.
And then CC corrupted all the rest of them. And now when CC leaves, it'll be Tanaka who will corrupt the next group. It's the most amazing thing.
Evo sent me a text last night. He said, he texted me, he was like, ask Masa what time should I leave tonight because he's pitching today.
It's amazing. The times have changed. We used to have CC, we had Tite, and we had Kuroda. Most amazing thing ever. So Kuroda's pitching, or Tite's pitching the first game on the road. So he leaves early. No, he takes Kuroda and CeCe with him.
Because he can't go to dinner by himself.
Because he can't go to dinner by himself. So we got no starting pitchers on the bench, but the starting pitcher, and he's only in there half an inning. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Are you serious? So he
didn't like to fly by himself. So whoever pitched the next day got to go, and then most of the time I pitched after Kuroda, so I just went too. So we'd be three deep in the city days early.
So for anyone who's listening to this and it's like, wait, hold on a second. A lot of times, teams will send the starter of the first game of the next series on the road ahead just in case it's a long game or whatever, so you get your rest, you get to the city ahead of time. So you're telling me if Andy's throwing the first game of the road trip or the first game of the next series in the next city, he's not going alone. He's taking at least one starter with him.
At least one starter.
And I tried it for the longest time to get him to take one coach. He said, one starter, one coach. Everything I'm trying to do, I'm trying to be the first guy. First coach ever to be a Jordan rep. First coach to ever make $20 million a season out of the bullpen. I'm trying to be the first in everything.
Oh, my gosh. This is phenomenal. Oh, I absolutely love this. So was Andy, was he a dude who he didn't want to go to dinner alone, like the night before a game? Did he always want someone with him in those situations?
He always wanted somebody. He always wanted somebody with him, and he would always eat the same things. If it was whatever city we were in, and he was pitching, we had to go to the same restaurant. So if it was in Toronto, it was a steakhouse that he always wanted to go to. In Minnesota, it was a different Italian place. Here, he ate Italian food all the time the night before. So it was always like his superstitious, whatever place he pitched good, that's where we're going.
It's very Wade Boggs-esque. Same meal always.
People call it superstition, but it's just routine.
It's just routine.
Yeah. That makes sense. I totally get that. Like, even me doing, like, a before play-by-play, like, I always will have, like, the same kind of thing. Like, I'm always nervous to have, like, sushi the day of a broadcast, you know? Like, just because I'm, like...
You get sick.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, something happens, you're done, you know? Like, you can't, like...
You're not hitting the cough button, you're hitting the diarrhea button.
That's true. Like, I don't even know what you do in that situation, man.
It ain't nothing you can do.
It's hard enough trying to figure out, like, if you really have to pee, what to do.
What happens, though, seriously, like, if, like, the broadcast, can they find somebody, or, like, what would happen?
Well, I'll tell you what. Last year, you remember Keith Olbermann he did play-by-play a couple times last year, right? The first game he was supposed to do was a game you guys were playing... it might have been the Astros here, like in April, and he was going to be doing the play-by-play, and he got food poisoning, but it was like night before, so they had a little time. So I ended up stepping in because I knew I live in New York, whatever, I'm ready, I do ESPN as well, right?
But what if it's like Indiana, if it's like a Pacers game or something?
I don't know. Like, last minute, what do you do? Occasionally... Like, someone can't get somewhere because of weather or whatever, and I think you just try and, like, find someone local last minute, you know? But it's tough, man. I don't know if it's, like, right up against, though, what happens. Because, like, what happens if it comes on, like, you're just about to go on air? You know what I mean?
Then,
like,
then, man.
It's hard enough trying to figure out, like, this isn't a problem for, like, actually getting on the air, but, like, you know, sometimes you get a game go to overtime, double overtime. Like, my bladder is timed for, like, you know, when that fourth quarter ends, I'm gone, you know what I mean? Like, so I had a game once, a triple overtime game in Portland between the Blazers and the Spurs, where I was doing a game with Hubie Brown, and I had to do we had a triple overtime game. I had to do overtime, double OT, and triple OT with my pants undone because I had so much pressure. I couldn't have any. I had to do under the belt, whatever. And Hubie's sitting next to me like, are you all right? Like, I'm like, I can't. I'm going to. And we actually, I had brought out like a like some like sort of like bucket. Like, just I didn't use it. I made it. I didn't use it, but just in case, man. So if it's firing out the other end, I don't know what the hell you do, man. I want no part of that whatsoever. No part of that whatsoever. So, Hark, when you are like, you're out in the bullpen during the game, like, because I feel like, I don't know if I've ever even asked you, like, what is the routine for you on a day-to-day basis during a game when you're out there with the guys?
Well, the beginning of the series is usually me going over all the hitters, kind of like our scouting report. And we do that for all the hitters. And then once the phone rings, it's me getting the individual ready. And everybody's different is the thing. You know, some guys I give more information. Some guys I give less. Some guys I give none.
Mm.
Just because I know those guys have done their homework or the other guy is just completely not going to listen anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Like Chappie. You got left, you got a right, you got a left. Chappie goes see, and he goes out there, you know, because if the situation called for 300 mile an hour fastballs, I tell Chappie that, he'd go out there and throw three sliders. I mean, either one is going to be effective to that guy. So
yeah.
With Chappie, it's different. With, you know, with a Greeny, it might be a little bit more information, kind of going over his sequences on how he's going to start hitters and how he's going to finish them, you know, and then. Other guys, most guys, if they're struggling, it's a lot less information. It's more like, go get them.
So you really have to get to know the personalities of all these guys, though, so you know their state of mind and, like, what they can absorb and what they can't absorb when they're out there then.
Yeah. Well, that all comes with building relationships. I mean, this is for all young coaches out there. Get to know the person before you force your coaching style on them. Understand what they like, what they don't like. Talk about something other than baseball before you start, you know, you need to change this or you need to change that. Because there's no trust. You won't be able to do anything until there is some trust. I mean, your reputation and whatever experiences that you've had only go so far. Because I got shellacked when I pitched, you know, and I had great games. But it doesn't necessarily mean that I know everything.
Right.
And what these guys have to say sometimes means a whole lot more if they're telling you the truth, or it always means more if they're telling you the truth than whether or not they're just BSing you.
Yeah.
And more times than not, players BS you. You know, whatever you're telling them goes in one ear and out the other. So you just want them to be able to grasp just a little bit of it and try to apply it. That's about it.
Can you tell when a guy is like okaying you but not absorbing it at
all?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got the best BS detector there ever is. You know, Tommy Canely is number one on the list. You know, I basically try to have aptitude tests with Tommy Canely every single day. But if I want to know something about Philadelphia Eagles football back in the 80s, he can read me off stats verbatim.
Orlando
Magic guy?
Oh, my God.
North Carolina Tar Heels.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The biggest sports. He's the guy that's in the stands screaming at people, the drunk guy screaming at people that you hate.
That's mainly as a fan.
But you go to Tommy for anything. Like, anything. You ask him a question about any soccer question I have, I always ask Tommy. Any football personnel question, you always ask Tommy. Like, he knows everything
about sports.
Wow, so is he the most knowledgeable sports fan?
He's the most knowledgeable, and I feel like I got a lot of sports
knowledge. Yeah, you do.
He blows me out of the water.
Wow.
It's not even close.
Names, dates.
Whoa. Yeah, it's not even close.
He's like Rain Man when it comes to sports.
Yeah, he can tell you people's lines, like their offensive lines and shit. Like, it's crazy. Like, he can, it's insane.
That's wild, man. How do you become a Magic fan?
I have no idea.
Like, probably the Philadelphia 76ers pissed him off or something. He said, screw him.
He said, I'm out. Yeah. That's funny.
But what Hark was talking about getting to know people and getting to know guys, that's the same way I feel with, like, trying to be a leader. Mm. Being a leader in the clubhouse and you know, trying to lead a team or trying to be a leader of a team, you need to know your players. You need to know your guys and have a conversation other than baseball and, like, know their families and – you know, just so you can have a bond and, like, a friendship to fall back on, because sometimes those conversations get tough and different situations. So if you have that trust and you have that friendship, you can say whatever you want.
Hark, what has been who's been a guy who, like, along those lines, who you feel like, man, you know what? Like, I really, maybe at first it wasn't that easy or whatever, but I really connected with him, and then, like, I got through to him, I saw changes. Like, I'm sure there are a lot of those guys, but is there one who stands out, or you're like, that bond, that meant so much to me. We built such a relationship, and then the results kind of took off, or, like, or you know, an example of somebody who you really got close to in that regard.
Well, CeCe's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely been that guy. Since 2009, we've developed a kind of relationship where, you know, whatever him and Larry work on in the bullpen, he's got somebody else to be able to reinforce it or be able to help him decipher it in a different way or a different language, you know. And that probably helps out the most because, you know, if when it came to him learning the cutter, I mean, because when he first got here, it was power and changeup.
Yep.
You know, he called his slider a cutter. For every day, I would say, man, that's not a slider. I know it's not a cutter. I just call it a cutter. I said, you throw the slowest cutter in his. He never threw it back door. He always tried to bounce it back foot to right-handers. I said, wow, that's a cutter. And so we fought with that for years until he finally learned a cutter.
Mm.
You know, Larry introduced it. Tite reinforced it, and then I've tried to reinforce it with things that we talk about and things we say, and it's just kind of evolved into that relationship where I can tell him he stinks, and I can tell him he's doing great, you know. But I've tried to be is just, you know, not a coach, just a friend, you know, somebody he can talk to about anything and knows that it goes as far as me, and that's it. You know, if there's something that I need to talk about, then we talk about it.
I was going to say, I mean, for me, for sure with him, but I think Dellen, too.
Yes.
1,000% Dellen, just, you know, being able to trust Hark and you know, knowing he having somebody that has his back all the time and somebody that he can trust that he can go to and talk about whatever. I mean, obviously, like he said, explained our relationship, but I feel like him and D had the same kind of relationship as and you see him, you know, taking off and becoming this great reliever and for All-Star game later, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's me. I was talking about this with CeCe at some point in one of our podcasts saying, like, if you look at the beginning of Dellen's career, like, he's on a Hall of Fame reliever pace. Mm-hmm. That's how good he has been thus far. And in the middle of this yet, you know, he's still dealt with his ups and downs, right? For the most part, just, like, excellence. But it's such an incredibly difficult game to play, and especially here with the scrutiny. Hark, how about, like, a couple years ago in the 2017 run when he's going through the struggles that he went through after he's already been one of the most dominant relievers in baseball, and we've now seen him return to that form. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of deal with that period of time with Dellen?
Well, it's kind of hard because I don't like to take a lot of that credit. I just like to be just a really small part of it. But Dellen's personality, Dellen's work ethic, and his fortitude makes him what he is.
Mm.
He finds things that people tell him, you know, like I said before, going one ear out the other. With Dellen, it always sticks. And D, you need to be, you know, you need to get your arm in this position. Man, he'll spend weeks, months, years repeating that and doing that all the time.
Wow.
Because he remembers that. You know, like in 2017 when he struggled after the All-Star break and then the playoffs and all this stuff went on. He was struggling to throw strikes, struggling to hold runners, struggling to field his position. Well, he came to spring training. He worked on the backfield, fielding the position. He did all these things. And Larry wanted to take it slowly with him by him doing more of his bullpens in secret, him doing his game situations, simulated games on the backfield. Well, Dellen didn't want to have it. He did his regular routine. He says, I want to get in games. And I think the first couple games was the same Dellen, but he just kept fighting through it. You know, it was just Larry trying to protect him, but Dellen saying, I don't want protection. I want to be able to get out there and fight through it with all the other adversities, fans and booing and everything else. And he ended up coming out the other side. Struggled in the beginning of the season, with all the same things, command, fielding, everything. And he just kept working. And then all of a sudden, bam, pops out the other side. And he's obviously one of our most dominant relievers.
I love that. And I mean, you know, Dellen is like, if you don't like Dellen, it's a you problem.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He, I mean, he is as nice a guy as you could possibly find. He's just a good dude, and he's so easy to root for. And I can remember last year when he was struggling the beginning of the year in April, he'd given up I think it was a tie game when he came in. You guys had lost the game to the Red Sox, and JD hit a Yankee Stadium home run, you know, just over the wall. And people are asking him, like, you know, what's going on, whatever. And Dellen stood there and was like, I can tell I'm close. And I was like, oh, I like that. Like, I could take, like, he's, and he stood there, and he always, man, he's as good as it gets with after a game and after a tough outing, being able to handle the heat and take the questions. But the fact that he stood up there and was like, kind of like, I got this. Like, I'm close. And literally, I think it was the next appearance on, he went like 18 straight appearances without allowing a run or whatever. But I love seeing that in him, that like, yeah, like he's, you know, if you're really good at something, right, you kind of know, like, I got this. And he's he's not, even with being a nice guy, he wasn't afraid to kind of like flex a little bit and show like, and I can do this.
Sometimes you have to be that, you know what I mean? You want to be humble and you want to, you know, stay within yourself all the time. But then, you know, sometimes as an athlete, it's other times when you need to show that side of yourself and, you know, just to get things back right.
Hark, who has been, let's not take a current guy, although maybe if you want to, you can go there. Like, who has been the most frustrating guy to try and work with out there? And it could be in a humorous way. like they're just totally aloof, and you're trying to hone them in.
Well, there's been a few. but I think David Robinson fits both categories for me, because he came in 2008. You know, I had him when his first outing.
Yeah.
And I had him in his last outing for the Yankees. And he was the one I've probably fought with the most on figuring out how to learn to pitch, because he's been in the big leagues for 10 years and still has no idea how to pitch, which – after time, I had to learn that that's what makes him so successful.
That's interesting.
Okay, because you have to understand that you either know it or you don't, and you think you do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy that doesn't but thinks he does, which is
that works for him
because he has plus stuff.
Yeah.
So if he has plus stuff, half the time he's throwing the wrong pitch in the right situation and gets outs. He believes with bases loaded and nobody else that he can get out of this unscathed.
Every time.
He's amazing. But he creates his own trouble. So he says, well, I might as well get out of it. And we would fight the next day. It never failed. I would tell him, all right, you got JD. First pitch, curveball. All right. Fastball in. Bounce the breaking ball. Okay. First pitch, cutter in. Second pitch, slider. Hanging breaking ball. Bullet down the line for a double. Walking to the clubhouse. Yeah, I know. I know what you told me. You told me, but I got out there. I just completely forgot. I don't know.
And that sounds just like him, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's funny.
I can go back to a conversation we had when he was 2009, and he was coming along then.
Yeah.
And Mo was down there, and obviously they started talking about money. And D-Rob, what do you, you know, do you have any? All I want to make is $15 million, and I'm out of this game. He says, I don't care. If the Yankees offer me $15 million 10-year deal right now, I would take it. You know, and then you got 10 years later, and he's made $90 million, and don't spend a dime on it unless it's for a kayak.
A kayak or a fishing ride.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely amazing.
You know what's crazy is that how this game works out, though, because we had all those guys down there, him, Phil Hughes, and Jabba, and if you'd have told me that he'd be the one that's still, you know, pitching, making money, and like out of all of those guys, he was the one that kind of, you know, emerged as a star. You know what I mean?
And he just sat back in the bushes.
Yep.
And but the thing that he did more than Hughes and more than Jabba did is they watched Mo. He watched Mo. He tried to emulate Mo with everything. His, you know, tap 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 with his foot when he came set. That's what Mo did. Mo always worked with him on trying to control his cutter, you know, which his cutter was natural. Mo will tell you that he developed bullshit. Mold cutter was natural.
You can say it. You can curse here if you want. Yeah.
It was so natural. I can still remember. Mo beat me in his first major league start. People don't know that when he was a starter.
Ooh, really?
And he says, yep, he beat me. He started against me when he was with the Yankees in 2000. Oh, geez, 1995.
I was about to say 2000.
In 1995, we pitched against each other. And when I was in Oakland, I was a starter in Oakland. I pitched against the Yankees in Mo's second or third big league start. He goes 5 innings. I went 3. And he got his first major league start.
Do you remember watching him that day? And, like, did you
don't remember
anything?
Nothing about Mo. Don't remember anything. All I was worried about was Bernie Williams and those guys. I wasn't worried about anybody. Paul O'Neill absolutely killed me. So, yeah, no. But it was weird. We went back. I was like.
Ruben Sierra probably was still on that team, too, right?
He was
95?
With me in Oakland.
Okay. Yeah, but in 95, was he still a Yankee, though?
No, he was in Oakland in 95.
Oh, that
Ricky
year?
Henderson.
Okay.
Dave Stewart, Dennis Eckersley, Ruben Sierra. Yeah.
Man.
All those guys.
So, now this makes me want to ask, Hark. What was it like with Mo down in the pen? Like, what kind of maintenance do you do with the greatest reliever of all time?
You know what? He made me feel like I was the best coach ever. I used to say, there's no way I shouldn't be the pitching coach. How am I not the pitching coach? Look what I've done with this guy. I mean, he saved, in 6 years we were together, he saved more games in those years, had a lower ERA, solidified himself in the playoffs, and I'm still the bullpen coach. I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Look what I'm doing with
what I'm doing. I hand him a ball before he warms up, and I write down how many warm-ups he had. I said, how am I not the pitching coach? But I tell you what, he helped me to be the coach I can be more than anybody, because people don't understand. He took pressure off of guys, and it allowed them to develop. Mm. You know, when you know you don't have to pitch the ninth inning in Yankee Stadium, or you don't have to pitch the last inning of sixth or seventh game of the World Series, it's easy.
Mm.
Because this guy took all the pressure off, and he was the same getting a save in the first game of the season or the last game of the World Series. The exact same. It did not matter. And guys took notice of that. You know, we had David Robinson. You credit a lot of what Mo did for him. Jabba Chamberlain. And Jabba, personality-wise, completely different. Get the last out, it's boom, boom, baby. Mo, get the last out, it's shake your hand, walk off.
Yeah.
Didn't matter. And I think that's – he allowed guys to be themselves.
You know, I can remember being an eight-year-old kid watching Mo for the first time, or 9 years old. I was watching Mo and, like, just watching with my dad and being like, you know, watch how calm his delivery is, and the ball just explodes. And then – watch the way he walks off the mound. And so I would always pay attention to that. So I always think back to in Game 6, 96 World Series, he throws two dominant lights out, seventh and eighth inning against the Braves, right? And the stadium is just up for grabs. I mean, it is electric. And he just takes this calm saunter off the mound. I mean, you would have no idea anything was going on, just that same calm walk. And I'm like, this guy, how is he not right now, like, jacked up? And of course, then that would be the walk he'd do in every big moment for the rest of his career. Like, but it was amazing, like, his ability to just stay here always fascinated me.
I think that's what made him so great, is that he could stay even keel, you know, for you know, throughout all those playoff runs, throughout, you know, all, you know, so playing for the Yankees for so many years and being in so many big situations, be able to stay the same all the time, I think, is what made him so great.
But it makes him great. That's that. You don't pitch in the big leagues for 15-plus years without forgetting the bad, because there's almost as much
bad
as there is great times. But it's the one or two great times that, you know, you celebrate and you embrace, and then you move on and say, all right, it's time to lock it back in again. You know, we're playing Boston. We'll be up 2 games. Then we face Kansas City. You got to be able to be the same the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge of being a New York Yankee, because, you know, guys need to understand that. And you got these young guys in the clubhouse, and, you know, they hit a home run against Boston. It's running around the bases with your fist up. You know, you hit a base hit against Kansas City with a ho-hum, I'm supposed to do that. And that's not the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be the same and feeling and same get after it as it is every time.
Mm-hmm. I've talked about this with you. I can't imagine doing something for a profession where I know I'm going to fail X number of times, right? Like, if you told me I'm going to go on air and have a shitty broadcast, like, you know, twice a week, or, you know, or even if it was once a month, I'd be like, oh my gosh, like, this is very scary. Like, I can't deal with
this. That's why you get good guests.
That's right. Amen. Hark is coming back every week. But, like, seriously, you got to deal with that mentally.
I think that's what makes you good, man. I think, like, I love that about here. More so than anywhere else is because the fans and, like, the organization keeps the pressure on you to be good no matter what. So it's always that sense of urgency to, like, even when you're working out in January, you're thinking about pitching against fucking, you know what I mean? Like, you're thinking about games.
October,
not even October. You're thinking about June. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to be good all the time here. They expect you to be good all the time. And you expect yourself to be good. I mean, obviously, you fail a lot, but you expect to be great, and these people hold you accountable for that.
Hark, how about, you know, you were known to be very close with Joe Girardi. You mm-hmm. guys were roommates back in the minors, right, mm-hmm. together? Yeah. And you know, he was one of the first guys that, you know, you were one of the first guys he wanted on his staff mm-hmm. here when he got the gig in 08. Mm-hmm. You know, you come back after you were the Diamondbacks pitching coach for a couple of years, and then Joe's dismissed, and Aaron Boone, one of his first calls was to you to try and get you to stay. Was that difficult, having, you know, one of your best friends gone and saying, like, all right, you know what? But I'm gonna stay here with this organization.
Well, here's a funny story. This kind of put it in perspective for you. Is just going forward is after, as soon as I get to spring training in 2018 or 17, it was really weird because I walk into the clock. See, my locker has my name on it, but none of my stuff that I leave every year in the locker, thinking Rob Kukuza was going to bring it. He said, bro, I thought you would have gone, have no chance coming back. He said, I left your stuff in New York, and I was going to have Richie mail it to you in California. So when you came back, man, I got the spring training. Said, oh, that's right, Hart's back. So they had to have all my stuff mailed back to me. I said, phenomenal. Man, what are you talking about? I was the first dude back.
No, but it was real. It was
phenomenal.
It was probably the weirdest dynamic, because I can guarantee you that everybody, knowing that Joe's my best friend, knew that I was not coming back.
Yeah.
But you got to understand, you know, I've developed a really good relationship with Cashman. There's a trust there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cash has never been, he's not the guy that's going to say, you're his best friend, you're gone too, because of your loyalty to him. Mm-hmm. He wants guys here that represent the Yankees. And I'm glad that he thought that I was one of those guys that still represents the Yankees and has something to offer the Yankees. I mean, it wasn't about me and Joe's friendship. And the other thing was, Joe did not feel like I needed to leave because he left.
Right.
Which served two purposes, because I know he's a true friend, because he's not going to say, you shouldn't take that job because I left or I got fired or whatever. So it worked out both ways.
That's a great story.
That's awesome. That's hilarious. I've never heard
that. So now you got to have Rob Kukuza come on here.
Yeah.
Oh, it was the worst feeling I ever had. He said, bro, I'm going to tell you the truth. I thought for sure you weren't coming back here.
That's terrific. Now, Hark, you grew up in – did you grow up in San Diego?
No. Or? Born in San Diego. My dad was in the Navy and then moved to Inglewood, lived in Inglewood till I was 10. Then we moved to Diamond Bar.
Okay. With like California in your blood and your roots, and, you know, went to Cal State Fullerton too, right? Like, and you're a Cal guy.
Mm-hmm.
You're a Cali guy, I should
say. He's Northern Cal.
Yeah, that's Northern Cal.
It's two different states. Two different states.
So
you want to hear us start arguing? Let's start.
All right, good. You give me a totally different segue. Yeah, I love it. Tell me the difference. SoCal, Northern Cal.
Man.
What's the difference between the
man,
two?
Complete difference.
In personality.
It's like a 20-year gap in progress. You know, you got the Californians, and then you go to Northern Cal, man, and it's like they're still watching Fast Times.
of Ridgemont High in the 2000s. It's hilarious.
It's totally different states, man. It really is. Like, it's split down the middle. It's crazy.
What's the biggest difference to you, do you think?
Man, I think, I mean, it's the biggest difference, I guess, is just the people.
Yeah.
You know, the way people act, the way people talk, the way people, you know, the way people are.
But you can, like,
totally
tell?
Different.
Like, you'd be, oh, that's
SoCal. I can totally tell somebody from Southern Cal and NorCal, for sure.
That's funny, man. Yeah. That is hilarious. So is it like, you know, a lot of times, Hark, when we think about, like, Southern California guys as New Yorkers, right? We're like, oh, yeah, like, you could see the, we'll say, like, you could see the L.A. come out in them, right? Or, like, or the Southern Cal. Do you think that's a real thing? Like, when you're in that weather, does it ingrain a little bit of laid-backness in you?
The most spoiled people ever in Southern California. Because in Northern Cal, you're going to get cold weather more so than you are in Southern California. But we are so spoiled. Southern California, if it rains 3 days in a row, you see the most angry. They make New Yorkers look like they're just all sunshine. They start panicking. They can't drive.
Nobody can drive on the freeway. So many accidents on the freeway.
You got people in New York who drive in the snow and are humming and stuff. Man, a little bit of rain in California, man, forget about it. I mean, people are just a mess.
That is terrific. Are you into shows the way that C is?
What do you mean?
What?
He's the guy I get all my shows
from.
No,
I didn't know this.
This guy watches everything.
Oh, my goodness.
You think I watch everything? He watches everything.
Really?
Man. From This Is Us to American Gods. He watches everything.
I heard if I watch This Is Us, I will cry. I'll cry every episode.
I watched the first season and cried like a little girl.
Yeah.
I stopped watching it because I probably lost all my testosterone.
What's your favorite show right now, though? What you watching right now?
Right now, I'm watching The Unit, which was set back in 2006 to 2010, I think. And it was an old Delta Force
show. See, I never even heard of these shows.
No, man.
He watches shows, man, like Chicago PD.
You into Chicago PD?
He watches
every Chicago show. PD, Med, Fire.
So I'm good friends with a couple of guys on Chicago PD because my buddy's there.
Bring him to the field.
You know Halstead?
Oh, Halstead? My God.
Yeah,
bring him to the field.
Oh, we're gonna bring
Halstead lost all that weight. Now he's all shredded.
Hey, you know, I'm going to send this clip to Jesse, the actor who plays
him. He's
going to feel so good about himself because I know he works hard in the gym, man.
Yeah, his brother's the doctor on Med.
There you go, man.
Not his real brother.
His TV brother. You're all over it, man.
He's all over it.
I'm telling you, man. And you know, I forget what LaRoyce's character in the show. He's a cop on Chicago PD too. What's his character's
name? The black
character? Yeah. What's this cop name? LaRoyce is awesome though. Yes. Great dude.
I'll be watching TV out like Sunday. I was watching Veep and I just paused it in the middle because I know it's a part that he's gonna laugh at and I had to text him like.
And I already saw it.
And he had already watched it.
It's Game of Thrones.
Texting through Game of Thrones the whole time. So we gotta break this down then.
Oh my gosh.
I've already watched the premiere twice.
I watched it three times already.
Oh, my gosh, man.
I watched it three times.
All right, what stood out most to you guys about the premiere?
Everything. All of it. I think the fact that Jon Snow was really a Targaryen after riding the dragon. That was pretty cool.
Right.
Yeah. Bron sitting there waiting for Jamie to come.
Yes. Oh, man.
I'm waiting for my friend. Waiting for an old friend?
Waiting for
and
an old
just
friend.
Seeing the look on Jamie's face when he saw him, man. He said, oh, I'm a dead man.
Oh, my goodness.
And then thinking, for me, I'm almost guaranteeing that Arya is the one who's going to kill either the dragon.
Or the Night King.
Or the Night King. With that new sword that her friend is making.
Gendry's making.
Gendry.
Yeah.
The blacksmith. Who they're going to end up burying.
You think they're going to get married?
Two. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's funny is they could end up being like the... I mean, he could be the king because he's still got Baratheon blood, right? Yeah. And she could be the queen, but basically a higher badass. You know? I mean, like...
Yeah, she wants nothing to do with it, which I love.
Oh, she is...
Nothing to do with
she's
it.
She's phenomenal.
I think season
awesome.
Seven, at last episode, was probably my favorite.
Oh, my
gosh. When she had Littlefinger.
Oh.
But then there's a thought that Littlefinger
ain't dead.
He's not dead. That he was one of the two-faced men from Thanos. Well, not Thanos. What's it?
Thanos is Marvel. From the Many-Faced God?
Yeah.
He's from that city.
Bravos?
Bravos. There you go.
Oh, really? So they think he might be...
He might still be alive.
Really?
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
There's so many
man.
Conspiracy theories going on in this clubhouse.
Oh, really?
It is.
Oh,
it's crazy. So, it's fun, though. I love it, though. Oh, it's so much fun.
It's the best.
So I just saw Kyle Higashioka a couple minutes ago, and he's so nice.
Yeah,
I love
him.
He's just a nice guy. And he was like, "You guys doing Thrones talk?" And as soon as you say it like that, I'm like, "Oh, okay, he's obviously into the show." He's not like, "How about that Game of Thrones?" You know, it's not that. It's like, yo, he's like, "You guys doing Thrones talk?" So I said to him, "We should do like either right after the finale or right before it. We should do a round table up of R2C2 with everybody who watches.
Who
it.
Watches oh, the show?
Yeah,
it'd be so
like,
much fun.
Jack, I don't know how we get the microphone situated, but like, get a boom mic and like we all just sit there. And how sick would that
be?
We
sick. Do
like
a, we have to record that.
Yeah,
that'd
right.
Have to be recorded.
We do uninterrupted to do a camera crew, and we do everybody who watches.
We gotta
it.
Find one of the actors on there.
Yeah right. I know. Real. Now Sadie Zillow, who produces the program, she has a connection with Peter Dinklage, I think.
Oh.
So we gotta get him on.
But he's a Targaryen too.
You think so?
You gotta bring Tyrion up here, man.
We need Tyrion.
He'd be hilarious.
And get him going.
Yeah, we get him on the field for BP.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's one of the cool things, right, about being involved with the Yankees.
Oh, like, yeah, everybody wants to come to the stadium. You know what I'm saying?
Right. If this was like the Rays or something, you're like, come to Tropicana. They're like, yeah, I'm good. Yeah, you're exactly. Like, you guys don't have to comment. I'll say it. Like, I'm good.
But we wouldn't even have the balls to ask him if it was
exactly. Exactly.
So what do we have to entice this person to come?
Exactly.
Absolutely nothing.
Right, exactly. That's my thing. Like, with the Yankees, it's so different, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could be like, it's amazing. Like, even, I see it with, because I'll do games with Chauncey Billups. Mm. And Chauncey, once I told him, like, oh, yeah, I can get you tickets. Really, man? You can get me Yankees tickets? It's like, anything with the Yankees is like gold in any other form of entertainment,
and
right?
I didn't know that until I came here. Like, I didn't realize how big Yankees world was until you get in it, until you hear, you know?
Yeah.
When you're outside of it, you try to fight it the whole time. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to see Yankees, Red Sox, Sunday Night Baseball. You don't want to see that shit when you're not in it. You know what I mean?
So you're like, why they always put them on?
Yeah,
like, yeah,
exactly.
That is advertised a week before they come on. ESPN is doing Yankee, Boston, Sunday Night Baseball advertising a week before the game.
When it's not you.
You hate it when you were
somewhere else. When it's not you, you hate it.
I went to Arizona for 2 years.
Yeah.
Didn't play Sunday Night Baseball one time. I say, they talk about, well, what was one of the best perks of being in Arizona? Never having to play
getaway
night games.
You're right, man.
On Sunday.
Oh, my gosh.
That was the best.
You are right. So, okay. So, have you guys read the theory, too, about, like, Bran is actually the Night King?
Yes.
Have you read that?
Yeah. I've heard that.
There's so many theories going around. Now, I hate spoilers. I will not mess with spoilers. I want to enjoy the show. But the theories, because they're all just kind of, like, fan-based without actual intel, those I get into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I like seeing, like, oh, well, I've been doing the same thing after the Star Wars trailer came out for Rise
just
of Skywalker.
Checking the comments.
Yeah, like, okay, what does it mean? Could Rey be a Palpatine? Since he's... are you a Star Wars guy too, Hark?
What?
Oh, baby. All right, so you watched the trailer.
You're talking about the first one came out when I was 12 or 13. So I've seen every single Star Wars multiple times.
Oh, I love it, man. So C and I liked Solo when it came out.
Yes, I did too. Mm-hmm.
See? Okay.
I liked it.
People didn't like it. But you're not going to get Hark to say he dislikes anything yet.
See, that's my kind of guy. I'm the same way, man.
I'm the same way.
Don't ever change, Hulk.
What was that movie when he goes to see?
Super 8.
Super 8. It's the worst movie ever made.
I said, first of all, you go in there with your expectations way too high. I said, I just like to be entertained. That's it. I've been to three movies with Rob Cucuza. He's walked out of two.
No, you can't do that.
No, but the first time he got up, says, hey, bro, I'm going to the bathroom. Never came back.
Whoa, what?
The second time he says, I'm not going to do it to you this time. I'm not telling you I'm going to the bathroom. I'm just leaving.
What movies?
I don't even remember. They were both in Boston.
Oh,
but
man.
I was like, I'm done asking you to go to movies.
That's terrible.
He'll get up and walk out.
But my thing is, like, if you haven't seen the story develop, up yet. Oh, he's like leaving in the third inning.
He could already tell. He was like, nah, I can tell.
I will say, I'm the same way as you, Hark. If the movie entertains me, I'm cool with it.
What is that? What is the movie entertain me?
No,
what is that bullshit?
It's like.
I mean, that's anything.
No, but it's like.
A commercial could be fucking entertaining.
Sure.
You want to sit there for 2.5 hours and watch some bullshit?
Yeah.
If it's entertaining.
You guys are crazy, man.
There's only
people. Like a Tropic Thunder's on.
Yeah.
I'm watching it from beginning to end. People think that was the worst movie ever.
That's a bad example because Tropic Thunder is hilarious.
But not another teen movie, right? Like, is that a great movie? No. But do I love it? Absolutely. But I'm that way. You know what I'm that way with? I'm that way even with like the Twilight movies and stuff. I'm like, I'll watch that and enjoy it. Absolutely.
Loved every Twilight movie.
Hell yeah.
That's one thing I haven't seen. That's a franchise I haven't seen.
Oh, you got to get into it.
Now you got to watch that.
And
even though the girl irritated me because she was constantly crying.
Yeah, and she's like always like biting her lip and stuff.
I tell you what, I loved every bit because I'm a big fan. I'm a big vampire fan. Any vampire movie, I'm in.
Oh, Hark is now. This is gonna be my go to guy for shows.
Did you like Van Helsing? He probably hated it.
No, I loved it. I like Van Helsing.
Yeah. I didn't see Van Helsing.
That was good.
Yeah. Oh man, this is good. Hark. You're gonna have to come back sometime, right? This just flew by.
I told you.
Mike Harkey might be the greatest guest in the history of R2C2, man. We got to do another one at some point this year, right,
no
man?
No doubt. We got to have somebody else, get somebody else on here. Maybe we can find out what Regina Hall is what she's doing next week. Regina Hall, Taraji P. Henson. Maybe we get somebody where I have to dress up a little bit.
You want me wearing your Yogi shirt next week?
Huh? Give her the Yogi shirt off my back. It'll be fine.
Oh, Hark, thank you for doing this, man. This was terrific.
Thanks, Hark.
I had a blast.